Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show. Sports Sunday, I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me, then destroy me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. If you have nice things to say, you can say them there. If you have mean things to say, you can say them there. They will both affect me tremendously, either direction. I'm very insecure, very up and down. We're calling an audible on the show right now because it's been a minute since we've talked to your friend and mine, Scott Chase, and the NBA draft happened what feels like an eternity ago because so much has happened right before and since then locally. But the NBA draft was pretty interesting. There's a lot going on in the NBA in general. So now Scott joins us. Scott is currently at Chasen Scott because he has like Twitter handle dysmorphia, but he's here now. Scott, wherever you are in the country, whatever your Twitter handle is, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. I'm a little bit worried though.
Why is that?
Well, because the last time we had a conversation about Josh Jackson, you had to come on the radio again and, you know, talk a bunch of KU fans off a ledge.
Wow, I guess that's true. Yeah, that was having to talk KU fans off of a ledge is usually the best way to do it is just say, I mean, just jump, I guess. Like, jump in the next year, and then you win another Big 12 title, and it'll all be okay again. We're just going to do this over and over and over again.
It never ceases to amaze, and this is every fan base. It's not KU specific, but
right.
How insecure sometimes fans can be, especially
yes.
After a loss. It's amazing sometimes.
And I was getting some of that from KU fans paying attention to them after Josh Jackson went to our Phoenix Suns, something I think you and I are both very excited about. Scott spent last year covering the Jayhawks for, I mean, Some Capital Journal world of a city somewhere in Kansas. Where were you? Does it matter? It doesn't matter.
The Topeka Capital Journal.
Journal World Daily Kansan, whatever. I don't know who you haven't covered KU for yet. But you watched a ton of Josh Jackson last year, and you've watched a ton of the NBA in general, but especially Phoenix. Tell KU fans why they should be excited about Josh Jackson in Phoenix.
Well, I mean, the first reason is because he's not in Boston. I think you saw that.
Wait, but
there was, you know, Danny Ainge kind of vented a couple days. Danny Ainge is the selfish GM.
Yeah.
He kind of vented a couple days after the draft that Jackson wouldn't basically work out there. He didn't want to be a Celtic. And quite frankly, that's because they have young assets at his position and the Celtics were, you know, looking to make a trade and still might. It was very clear that Josh Jackson liked the fit in Phoenix. And Ryan McDonough, the Suns GM, even said a couple days after the draft that pretty much no player got a star in the draft that fits with their team needs that opens spot at the wing for Phoenix more than the Suns. He'll have the opportunity to play. He'll have the opportunity to develop. And he's with a young core that, you know, a bunch of guys who are 23 and under will look to grow together.
And Frank Mason ends up going to Sacramento. He's the first ever AP Player of the Year to be drafted outside of the first round. I think everyone else had been top 20 up until Frank Mason ended up going in the early 30s. What are we going to see from him, if anything, in Sacramento?
Yeah, you're really proud of that. I am,
man.
I haven't made it your pinned tweet yet.
I am. Is it my pinned tweet? I think it probably is, actually. I am proud of that.
No, I know it's your pinned tweet.
Okay, well, I am proud of that because I started doing that stat research like months ago, and I went through the whole basketball reference page and clicked every single name just to make sure. Like Blake Griffin, let me make sure he was a first round
draft. You know what the most satisfying feeling in the world is?
What's the most satisfying feeling in the world?
It's when you work that hard on a tweet.
Yes.
And you look up all this information and you have to condense it into 140 characters.
Yes.
And it loses all of the research.
Yes.
But then it gets a bunch of retweets.
Yes.
And it was all worth it.
Yeah, it was. And I did all of it again on draft night at like pick 20. I was like, you know what? I'm going to double check this again because if I get this wrong, I knew it was going to get traction because of all of the Rock Chalk Blog KU fan followers and everything. And I also knew I was going to be retweeting it from Rock Chalk Blog because I'm not going to do that work and not pimp it out a little bit. I knew if I got it wrong, then eventually I would have to walk it back. So I went through all of that trouble two different times, to eventually look around and see other people tweeting it 45 minutes later as an original piece of work that just made me want to barf.
Well, you can't undo it once it gets a bunch of retweets.
Right.
I had a friend who was tweeting about all the Boston Celtics picks when one of the trades was rumored to happen, and he was off by one pick, but it got like 12,000 retweets.
Oh.
He was like, well, what do I do with this?
God, yeah, Twitter. That's when Twitter is just a monster. Like, the whole name of the game is like, be quick, get it out there, make it happen in 139 characters, and then you get it wrong one time, even a little bit, and it lives forever.
Would you pay $5 a month for Twitter, but you can have 142 characters instead of 140?
I thought you were gonna ask if I would essentially pay for retweets. Because that eventually, there's a number there somewhere that I would be like, yeah, you know what? Like, if it gets me to a larger follower count, yeah, for sure. I don't think I would pay $5 a month for two more characters, though.
I think I would.
Am I the only one that gets to do that, like, on the whole site?
Yes.
I'm wondering if I can...
anyone who pays the $5.
Anyway, anyone who pays the $5 can do that?
Yeah.
No, I don't care. No, now if I could have...
exclusivity for you.
No, if I could have like 280 characters and I'm the only one that can do it, and maybe I can leverage that, you know, into increasing my own following, then I think I'd be down.
I think you would sell out so quickly if you got that space to advertisers.
Oh, dude, so you have no idea. Absolutely. I'd have my little like 137 character quips and then a solid another 142 of just straight up like, buy this dish soap. I'm very excited.
You know what would happen, though. You know what would happen. You'd type out the whole tweet, and it'd be 281 characters.
Oh God, I would have to trim down my joke. I would do it for the sponsors. If anyone wants to sponsor my Twitter account,
Frank Mason. I think this is where this conversation started.
It's where I started the conversation, and then you decided to make it about yourself and about Twitter and about my stats, which I do appreciate.
Twitter,
you know.
I made it about you.
That's
fair. I talk stuff a lot.
At JB Briscoe.
Yes, with an E.
Not, no, no, B-R-I-S-C-O, no more letters. Talk about Frank Mason, damn it, or I'll call Evan next time.
All right, so Frank Mason on the Kings. Kings, you know, the Kings are where KU basketball players generally go to die, but
right.
I actually think it's pretty solid with Frank Mason there. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox was their highest pick, and he's a point guard at the same position. But, I mean, nobody really thought Frank Mason was going to walk into a starting job. You know, his role is... as a backup point guard, he'll be able to compete for that spot, you know, on a pretty talent-starved team after they traded DeMarcus Cousins. And, you know, let's see what he does in summer league, because if this is a guy who can average 25 points a game in summer league and play, you know, basically like he did at Kansas his senior year, he's absolutely going to get NBA minutes. So I think it was a pretty good landing spot for him, even though, as I said, the Kings are pretty much where Jayhawks go to die.
I'm looking at the Kings depth chart right now. I recognize, like, three names. And I get four counting Ben McLemore, who I guess is not a corpse. Good for him.
Yeah, well, you know, with Ben McLemore, what's actually kind of funny about him is I was talking to a reporter out in California when I was covering an NBA event, and he told me that the Kings knew Ben McLemore was good, but they didn't know how to make him good, and so they wouldn't trade him for that reason. I thought that was such an interesting, you know, kind of an offhand comment to me.
Yeah, you don't want to look bad, so you're just holding on to this guy who you can't also get anything out of. That's very interesting, huh? What I mean, I guess I imagine that there's a lot of that kind of pettiness, where you're like, you could be making your team better, but you're making yourself look worse. Huh?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I think it's only natural, and in a sport, you know, like the NBA, where the salary cap goes up and up and up, and you know, this guy, I don't know what his contract is, but you know, first contract might net you $3 or $4 million a year, $5 million, $6 million on the top end. I mean, that's not an outrageous amount of money. It's like having a guy on a rookie deal basically saying, you know, we're going to hold on to you until your rookie deal is up.
Finish this sentence for me. The New York Knicks are currently blank.
The first three words that came into my mind, I don't think I can say. they're enjoying the Phil Jackson experience, the falling asleep in workouts.
Right.
Offering up your superstar player and the guy who has a chance to be, you know, a pretty transcendent big man for, you know, for some picks and a starter. Man, they are an interesting team. And, you know, I should have said this, actually. Josh Jackson's a winner because he didn't go to the Celtics. He is really a winner because the Knicks did not trade up with the Suns.
Yes. Yes, that would have been... God, can you imagine? Okay, follow-up question.
Go ahead. Imagine Josh Jackson, you know, he gets to New York. He's probably very excited to learn from Carmelo Anthony. He's, first of all, like, he's going to be on a bottom-dweller team, a team that's, you know, right there ready to rebuild, but with a president who thinks he can sign guys like Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and trade for and, like, build these, you know, I think Derrick Rose called them a super team last year to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's just a nightmare fit.
Follow-up question to the New York Knicks are currently blank. The Chicago Bulls are currently blank. Fill in the blank.
I didn't realize Phil Jackson was their president, too. What a terrible trade. The crazy thing is, I can talk myself into anything.
Yeah.
I could have gotten on board with that trade, but they gave up the 16th pick, too. They essentially did a pick swap with Jimmy Butler for Levine and Dunn. Now, Dunn had a disastrous rookie year. I'm not sure how much you watched, but, you know, I covered one, like, the Kansas City game, that the exhibition game.
Yeah.
And he was so bad he couldn't get on the court. And I remember thinking at the time, like, Tibbs already doesn't play rookies. So if Chris Dunn can't dribble and he's a point guard, that he's not going to ever see the floor. And it's funny because this deal was rumored last year, too. And it's almost like the Bulls were like, hey, it's still on the table. We haven't watched any basketball in 12 months. And haven't seen that Levine got injured and Chris Dunn really didn't do much. And hey, we'll give you our 16th pick too because, you know, we're a rebuilding team. Why would we need draft picks?
Also, like, they haven't watched basketball in the last year or called any other franchises. Like,
well, what's insane is the idea, too, that Boston, who has just been hoarding assets, reportedly turned down a trade of the third overall pick for Jimmy Butler. I mean, that's insane that Boston would turn that down.
That I didn't know that was the rumor. And also, like...
That was...
I mean, that would have been a little hard to swallow for Chicago, right? Like,
even that, yes. Because, I mean, you're essentially just getting, like, Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum. And if we're being honest, like, the best-case scenario is those guys turn out to be a player who's as good as Jimmy Butler.
Oh, yeah.
I think was on the All-NBA teams this year.
Yeah, I would be surprised to see any of the top five guys be as good as Jimmy Butler. Like, that's, and I know apples and oranges eventually positions, whatever. But yeah, for Josh Jackson to become Jimmy Butler would be an incredible win for Josh Jackson's NBA career. And
that's the thing, right? So it's so sexy to have assets. And
yeah, you're an assets man. I get it. You think assets are sexy?
What's the most exciting part about having the number one overall pick? It's that
big fat asset.
It can become something great. But what's funny is then you think about a trade where a team is like, yeah, give us the number one pick. We'll give you Kristaps Porzingis. It's like, well, I don't know. Our number one pick could become the next Kristaps Porzingis.
Right.
Like, what are we even talking about?
Right. Yeah. I understand that less in basketball than any other sport, I think, because when you can go into the luxury tax, the contract details aren't so crippling, right? Like, I understand the value of say a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Like, the reason Patrick Mahomes is so valuable is because they're going to be able to pay him $18 million less than they're going to pay Alex Smith next year or whatever, and that gives you so much cap flexibility and also club control. But Kristaps Porzingis is still under his rookie deal for a while, right?
Yeah, well, you basically get, you know, 7 or 8 years of team control because of restricted free agency.
Right.
And those max contracts aren't even close to, like, the super max you would get if you were on an All-NBA team or, you know, veteran max extension. So, no, you're absolutely right. A team like Portland, I think, had $140 million cap or something like that this year. They were way over it, and now you can't sign guys past the cap line, but there are ways to make the numbers work.
Right.
You wait to re-sign your own players. You can use bird rights. You can use exceptions. So, no, you're absolutely right. In the NBA, it's not so much about – if you want to start your team, I should say, you can make it work. You think about how good Boston was this year. I mean, they can pretty much – they're a trade away from being able to sign Gordon Hayward to a max deal just using cap space. And they were the number one seed in the East last season. So, no, it's not anything like the NFL. You're absolutely right.
I'm so upset with Chicago, and I don't care. I don't care about the Bulls. Like, I really, but it's upsetting because it's such like an offensively bad deal.
And the thing is too, even if it works out for them, like even if let's say LaVine is great, Dunn is great,
yeah, what's the best case scenario?
All that, they could have gotten more.
Yes,
and that's
yes!
the thing. It's never that in hindsight the deal looks good. Same with the Cousins trade. Let's say Buddy Hield turns out to be incredible,
yep.
and the Cousins trade, it looks great. It doesn't matter because if you could have gotten more, you could have gotten more, and yep. that should be the mark of if it's a good or a bad trade.
LeBron is going to be playing where 2 years from now?
Well, you know, all the reports say L.A. I have no inside information. I'd be pretty shocked if it wasn't Cleveland. I think he's going to finish it out there.
Is he going to have the owner killed?
Is he going to have what?
The owner killed, murdered, cold blood, assassinated.
Oh, yes, of course. That's
exterminated. Like, that's got to be soon, right? This
have
is
you
absurd.
Seen, Liam Neeson's Taken?
Yes, right.
Okay, so imagine now it's like instead of his daughter getting taken, he's the one taking his daughter.
So LeBron is going to go daughter kidnapping is what you're telling me.
That somehow I think that's what I'm reporting.
Fantastic. That's an exclusive. Charlie, tweet that on the 810 account, please. just that whole situation seems so bizarre, and it can't – like LeBron publicly went out and defended David Griffin after he got not extended or whatever. His tweet seemed very pointed at like, oh, this is a decision that I wouldn't have made if I had been consulted. What is the strategy in Cleveland? Is Phil Jackson also the president of the Cavaliers?
Oh, man, it sure seems like it. I mean, you think about the Comic Sans letter that was written when LeBron left that said, I guarantee the Cleveland Cavaliers will win a championship before the so-called king. They seem to like upsetting LeBron there, which, you know, there's kind of a rule of thumb in life and sports and whatever, which is like if you have the greatest company in the world and you have the greatest asset in the world at that company, mm-hmm. maybe don't alienate it. And that seems to be the direction of the Knicks. And for some reason, you know, if LeBron wanted something and you're the owner of LeBron's team, you make it work. And that's the only reason we're even talking about LeBron going to L.A. or LeBron going elsewhere. It's because people are wondering what the relationship is like with him and the owner. In a vacuum, it's a slam dunk for him to stay in Cleveland forever. Although, if he would like to come to Phoenix, I know a 36-year-old GM who would probably make any signing he wants.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious as to what you think in a larger scale at the NBA. Is what you think is what's happening next? What is the state of the NBA now? How does the NBA work with these super teams? You know, or even the singular super team, like mm-hmm. a team like Phoenix, since we're going to be biased and also they're a good example in this case. They pull together all of these young assets. Damn it. And you build around Devin Booker and Josh Jackson and the other three Kentucky guards, and you build this young core where you say, I wanted them to take De'Aaron Fox so bad just so they could have five Kentucky guards in their roster for a mere moment. You build around this young core and you say, well, you know what, 3 years from now, 3-4 years from now, if these guys develop like we think they could, and LeBron is on the decline and the Warriors have been broken up on some level, you know, maybe then we can contend. Are there other options for NBA franchises who don't have LeBron?
Well, I think there are really two paths right now, and I think it's why people are frustrated with teams like the Boston Celtics. And also the Suns, the path is patience. They got linked to a couple of trade reports with some guys like Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge, kind of older stars,
mm-hmm.
and that seems like a horrible idea. You shouldn't be in win-now mode unless you have the roster to do it. Now, a counterexample to that is a team like Boston. Boston could make a trade for Paul George. Boston could sign Gordon Hayward in the cap space, and then I think they would be right there with the Warriors. I think they would match up with the Cavs well, though they're always going to have point guard issues. Not that Isaiah Thomas isn't good, but that, you know, he struggles defensively in the playoffs, but they're a team that could get to that super team level and at least make it interesting, right? I mean, if the Spurs got like Chris Paul, they would be interesting. And then we could see, you know, maybe the Warriors go down. Maybe the Warriors don't win every game in one half of the playoffs, mm-hmm. the one half of the playoff bracket. So I think there are the two directions. I think there are the arms race, and I think it's the you know, slow play. And you know, who gets screwed here in situations like that are teams like the Portland Trailblazers, who were fourth in cap in the league last year. But they have no shot of winning an NBA championship.
Right.
While, you know, Golden State and LeBron, even teams like Boston, San Antonio, the Clippers, they're not getting past any of these teams. So those are the teams that really get screwed in the middle. And that's why I'm really curious to see if a guy like Gordon Hayward will stay in Utah, who I think is a really interesting core there. Or, it, you know, he just says, let's go to Boston, let's try and win a championship and see if that's enough.
But with that outlook, I think you're essentially saying you've got the heavy favorite, the team with the best player, and then Boston and San Antonio being two teams that could be interesting. Like, you're talking about a four-team league there, and two of those teams are only, like, potentially mattering.
Even, I would say three. I would say three of those teams are only potentially mattering.
It's the feeling that I was left with throughout the NBA all last season, where I could enjoy a game or two, and I would, you know, see what the national matchup was if something interesting was happening. But whenever it comes down to it, you're just waiting for Golden State and Cleveland, and then you're waiting for Golden State to beat Cleveland in five.
Yeah, I think it can be a good thing, though. The problem is we've kind of jumped past this point where, you know, LeBron's age is very deceptive because the number of minutes he's played in the NBA, first of all, getting there at such a young age, but also just how many minutes he's played in the playoffs and things like that. So I'm not saying I'm expecting like a massive decline or anything like that, but I wonder how many more years of LeBron James triple-double in the finals basketball we have left, if it's one or if it's two. That's what worries me, you know, 2 years from now when it's the Warriors and it really is, you know, a chance for them maybe to go back-to-back playoff runs without losing a game. Now, that can be interesting in of itself, but, you know, for me, I like at least some competition. I mean, the seven-game series in the finals last year was not very exciting because most of the games were blowouts.
Yeah.
Going into game seven, I mean, that was so exciting to see who's going to win.
All right, Scott, we'll get you out of here on this. Again, this is at Chasen Scott on Twitter. His name is Scott Chasen. It makes sense. Last question. Did you know that Frank Mason was the first AP player of the year to not be drafted in the first round of the hashtag NBA draft? The award was first given in 1961. That's from at JB Briscoe on Twitter. Did you know that stat?
I did know that because, like John Dorsey, I have a lot of time to browse the internet, and I came across that stat on 12 different Twitter accounts.
nice connection into another story that we're not going to talk about because your time is up, damn you. Go go acquire some assets.
All right, thanks for having me, man.
Scott Chasen of the internet and every magazine, every newspaper, every publication in Topeka and Lawrence and eventually – hopefully somewhere that, you know, like gives him a full-time job so he doesn't have to make 14 Twitter accounts to try to boost my self-esteem. I also think that pretty much covers our NBA talk for the next, 11 months? Until next year's finals? Perfect.
This is Sports Sunday.
913-3810-810 is the phone number. If you think I'm on to something
with Joshua Briscoe,
or if you think I'm on something, either way, love to have you
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show, Sports Sunday here on 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This show's gone really fast today, and there's only half an hour left. And I had this problem on Sports Night on Friday also. I just had too much to talk about and not enough time for it, which is a great problem to have, especially because Cody's on vacation still. I don't know how Sports Night's going to work out. I might be around Sports Night. We'll figure it out. If I host Sports Night Monday night, I'll find out Monday at like noon. So it'll be good. If that does, in fact, come to fruition, it'll be really good that I have more material ready to go for that. One thing that I haven't been able to talk about yet, I didn't talk about on Friday, haven't had time to talk about yet today, and I have some severe aggravations with some of the responses to this story. SB Nation's Outsports, they talk, is an entire SB Nation blog devoted to, I don't even know how to put, I get devoted to gay people in sports very often and like pride events and like just covering that section of sports. And you don't have to read it if you don't want to. I'm going to put that out there now. Okay? I don't own that site. No affiliation with SB Nation. I don't really care if you read it or not. But I'm sure some of you are upset that blog exists. But there was a story out there a few days ago about former Patriots and Chiefs tackle Ryan O'Callaghan because he came out as gay on June 20th. And I read the whole thing, and you might only have to read the little like blurb, like the little subhead to realize what's going on here and to realize why this story is so interesting. Because I would talk about a former chief coming out as gay after his career at that point. Like, that's enough of a story to talk about for a little bit. Because I think it's interesting. I think the way that we do or don't talk about gay people in sports is interesting perpetually, because there are definitely more gay guys in football than we know about, because we know about none. So this story is interesting on its own at that point. The headline, former Patriots and Chiefs tackle Ryan O'Callaghan comes out as gay, that headline on its own is interesting to me. The subhead should be interesting to everyone, period. O'Callaghan had always planned to commit suicide after football until Kansas City Chiefs staffers stepped in. And this whole story, it unpacks all of this. And his plan as a repressed gay man was to get good at football, to do something very stereotypically manly to cover up anyone's guesses at his sexuality. Which in and of itself is kind of sad, because it's this sort of like self-repression. But it goes so much further than even that, because his plan was to play football, to cover it up, and then to kill himself after his career was over, because he would lose that bit of coverage. And there are a couple of blurbs from the story I'm going to read, and then there are a couple of comments on the Facebook post of the story that I'm going to talk about, possibly in length. Here's a quote from O'Callaghan. "I was abusing painkillers, no question," he said matter-of-factly. "It helped with the pain of the injuries, and it helped with the pain of being gay. I just didn't worry about being gay when I took Vicodin. I just didn't worry." He was also spending money recklessly. In the final month of 2011, he said he was spending $400 a day on drugs. He plunked another $70,000 into a building in a small cabin on his property outside of Kansas City, where he intended to eventually end his life. "I started spending all of my money to put myself in a position where it would be impossible, or at least extremely difficult, to back out of killing myself." And he ended up talking to a therapist about the drug addiction problems. And then he came out to her. And then he went to Scott Pioli, former Chiefs GM. At the time of this story, the GM of the Chiefs. And he went into Pioli to tell him. And he was saying that, you know, he had something terrible to tell him. And he was just devastated to be telling him this. And then here's the story picks up. "At this point, he," O'Callaghan, "was fighting back tears. Pioli's mind raced, wondering if his player had harmed or killed someone. 'I'm gay,' O'Callaghan said. His private announcement was met with immediate support from the GM. Then," quote, "'So what's the problem you wanted to talk to me about?' Pioli asked. O'Callaghan looked at him, bewildered, 27 years of fear, anxiety, and self-loathing, meeting Pioli's stare. 'Scott,' O'Callaghan said, 'I'm gay.' Pioli acknowledged that and again asked if O'Callaghan had done something wrong." Like, the first time I read that, I got chills. Because I can't even imagine feeling that kind of pressure to tell someone that about yourself. And your whole life, you've loathed this fact about you. And I imagine in some way, and I reached out to Ryan O'Callaghan to see if he wanted to come on, and I didn't hear back. I'm sure he got a bunch of media requests immediately following the story, so maybe some point later on we get to talk to him. But I imagine that some part of him almost wanted a louder response than that, or at least expected it, because it had been so hard for him to carry it. He finally gives it up to Scott Pioli, and the response is that wasn't even a big deal. Because it wasn't to Scott Pioli. He had plenty of gay people in his life that the story mentioned occasionally. And then after the conversation, apparently, here's the whole, this is the little blurb. They shook hands after, as O'Callaghan was leaving. And they apparently just hugged as a greeting before that, even whenever O'Callaghan walked into the room that day. They shake hands, and the story picks up again. "What's with the handshake?" Pioli asked. "I just told you I'm gay," O'Callaghan replied sheepishly. Pioli was having none of it and grabbed O'Callaghan. "Dude, it's okay," Pioli said. "Just don't grab my butt." That broke the tension. O'Callaghan burst into laughter. The humor was a sign to him that Pioli wasn't going to change. They could get along just as they always had. "Don't worry," O'Callaghan replied. "You're not my type." That whole story made me think of Scott Pioli as an actual human being and not just a control freak who didn't do well with the Chiefs. The Javon Belcher thing had a little bit of that, but even then, Scott Pioli was being the response to the Javon Belcher thing. But even then, Scott Pioli was being very much like the face of like a grieving organization, and that didn't particularly humanize Scott Pioli to me. It made me respect him for the way he handled all of that, but this made him just seem like a human. It's on OutSports. If you Google Ryan O'Callaghan, you're gonna find the story. The whole story is really interesting. Except for people who don't read the story. Because Arrowhead Pride, also an SB Nation blog, they posted the story on the Facebook page. And there were a shocking, genuinely, and I guess I'm ignorant, a shocking number of replies to it that just, like, blew me away. One that, within 20 minutes of being posted, had, like, a dozen likes and was at the top of the comment section. Just says, "Who bleeping cares? No one gives a damn what you do in your bedroom, but you continue to tell us until we finally tell you that we don't care, and then you freak out acting like we cared in the first place. Shut up already." And I don't understand that response. I don't understand it. Because this story isn't about Ryan O'Callaghan coming out and then asking to be celebrated by a world that doesn't care. This story is about why it does matter and why you should care, because it gives you insight into what he was living with by the feeling that he was surrounded by people who did care and cared negatively, people who would have hated him for coming out sooner. And there's another Facebook comment that I actually thought was super insightful and super challenging, addressing all of the negative comments that had already been there. It said, "If this story was just about drug addiction and just about plans of suicide, none of you would be saying, 'Who cares?'" I mean, think about that. If this story was exactly the same, but Ryan O'Callaghan was straight, it was a story about him battling drug addiction and planning on killing himself after football, the responses to the story would have been entirely supportive. Entirely. No one would have said, "Who effing cares?" Not one person would have said that. Everyone said, "Oh man, I'm glad you're not addicted to painkillers anymore. And I'm glad that you found peace in your life and that you're not contemplating killing yourself anymore." No one would say, "Who effing cares?" Also, Vic Crown, this guy with the comment that I've been enjoying so little, about who effing cares what you do in the bedroom, no one gives a damn what you do in your bedroom. His Facebook profile picture is a picture of Tyreek Hill. So at least Vic is very consistent. He really doesn't care what you do in your bedroom, apparently. I mean, he doesn't have to comment about it and tell everybody else to stop talking about it. But man, like, he's consistent. He will make his profile picture someone who in his bedroom beat his pregnant fiance, girlfriend? I can't remember. Beat his pregnant girlfriend. That guy is his profile picture. So yeah, I mean, listen, he really, really, really doesn't care what's going on in anyone else's life, apparently. I want to believe also that the majority of people listening right now can at least say, yeah, like, how terrible to feel so terrible about yourself that you're planning on killing yourself when your football career ends, and that you get addicted to painkillers, and that you feel like you can't talk to anyone about who you really are and what you really feel. I would like to believe that the majority of the listening audience can feel that much empathy. Because everybody's got something like that, right? It's like, oh, this is a painful truth. Or this is something that I feel like I can't really talk about. Or you know someone in your life, at least, who's been in that place. Something comparable. I can't imagine being so devoid of empathy that your response to that story is to get on Facebook and to comment about how no one cares, or to stop talking about it. When that response is why stories like this still exist. And if you don't care, if you really, truly don't care, keep scrolling. Great, you are so woke that you don't see anything. You don't see color or race or culture or money, sexuality. You are just the wokest. Everyone around you is a smurf. Everyone's blue. But if you're taking time to comment, to let everyone know how little you care, with your Tyreek Hill profile picture, I'm gonna check out of your opinion. I don't value it. The article's great. The story's really interesting. The response to it made me sad. Now that, Charlie, I think we just set the record for definitely the most serious segment the show's ever done. Like, we've been doing this show for 6 months. 3 hours a week. I don't think I've ever ended a segment in this exact tone of voice, not sarcastically. Go ahead, say something. You look like you want to say something. You're afraid you're not going to touch it? Fine.
That's fine.
It's just so draining. Like, man, I don't need every single person in my life to be Bernie Sanders. Like, I am so not asking for that. I really don't. I don't need everybody to be about the top 1% of the top 1%. I really don't need that. Like, really, I feel like one Bernie Sanders is probably plenty. I don't need everybody to, whatever, talk about equal rights and climate change all day. I'm super comfortable taking a few hours a day to talk about sports instead of reading my Twitter account about healthcare. Like, I don't need any of that. I'm not asking for any of that. Just, like, an average amount of, like, human empathy would be great. Like, just that's all I want. Let's just do that. Let's just be empathetic for the guy that lived his life in the closet and then ended up abusing painkillers and had a plan to kill himself. Can we be glad for him that he's not in that place anymore? You're glad for Tyreek Hill? You mother bleeping bleephole. I wanted Charlie to go to break after I said that, but he wasn't looking. I even pointed at you and everything.
This is Sports Sunday.
I think we did two really good hours
with Joshua Briscoe.
And we also did this hour
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I don't think we had that problem there. We just had a really fast 3-hour show. It's like it shanked that last segment by Vic Cram. I get shanked by someone in a Tyreek Hill jersey for the last segment. Welcome back to the end of Sports Sunday. Hopefully just the end of this version of it. I just meant the end, like the end of today's show. Welcome to the end of today's Sports Sunday. But if I get stabbed by someone in a knockoff Tyreek Hill jersey, I guess that's the last ever. I don't know. My name is Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Something that Rob DeSell did, a frequent listener to so many of the things that I say, which means that Rob needs better hobbies or something. But he said that he has a new goal in life, which is to be the wokest. And then his second goal in life is to start using better grammar. Thank you, Rob. During the break, Charlie said, hey, you haven't talked about Derek Carr's contract yet. And I haven't today. He's right. So we are going to go full steam ahead in that direction now. Because it actually is very interesting. And I think the Raiders are making, like, kind of a mistake, but, like, a mistake that everyone knew they were going to make and that 32 teams would make. They're making the most popular mistake in football. Like, I don't even mean popular as in, like, everyone's doing it. I mean most popular as in, like, every analyst would be like, yeah, they did the right thing. It's also probably a mistake.
I was just going to say it's a mistake that they needed to make or that they were going to make regardless.
It was a mistake that literally anyone could be like, excuse me, this is a mistake. And they're like, yeah, maybe. We're going to try to manage it as well as we can. Because the Raiders signed Derek Carr to a 5-year, $125 million extension. He's the highest paid player in the NFL now. And the NFL quarterback market is just extremely hard to get right. Because when you devote $25 million a year to a quarterback, he's got to be Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger, or like maybe Drew Brees. And because the rest of the top five highest paid quarterbacks, the top four highest paid quarterbacks before Derek Carr's contract, because I don't know exactly where Carr is this year. I think he's actually below these guys. The top four highest paid salaries among quarterbacks this year in the NFL are making about $24 million a year, and it's Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer, Drew Brees, and Kirk Cousins. And all of those teams, Indy, Arizona, New Orleans, Washington, they all have something in common. Their rosters have big old gaps in them somewhere. The Colts have troubles all across their defense, their offensive line, even in their offensive weapons. They spent a large part of last year letting Frank Gore run the ball, and they throw it to Ty Montgomery. Not Ty Montgomery, I'm sorry, that's Green Bay's, one of Green Bay's problems. We'll get to that later. They throw it to T.Y. Hilton successfully, and then they throw it to Dante Moncrief occasionally successfully, and then they throw it to everyone else completely and unsuccessfully. I think something called a Griff Whalen occasionally gets targets, which genuinely sounds like a Neopet or something, or like a mythical creature. Freaking killing it with like the 14-year-old audience right now. The Colts have all those problems. The Cardinals have a nice set of young, cheap weapons. David Johnson, Josh Brown, John Brown. Josh Brown's the kicker. John Brown and Larry Fitzgerald. What's the other receiver's name? Damn, there's too many. I think it might be another Josh. There are a lot of talented people can get that name. It makes sense. It's fine. I'm not going to worry about it right now. There's like four. John Brown. Josh something. John something?
I think it's another John, yeah. But
someone will call and it'll be too late because the show will be over. We're skipping that detail because the show is almost over. They have nice, young, cheap weapons, but their offensive line struggled last year. It was 26th in the NFL on Pro Football Focus, and Carson Palmer is now on the back end of his career. The contract is big now, but he never actually won anything with the Cardinals. The Saints traded away Brandon Cooks before he needed a new contract, and the Saints' defense was one of the worst in the league last year. They gave up the second most points per game in the entire NFL. Washington's the perfect example because it's franchise tag. That money's guaranteed. Washington just let DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon go. They had to afford Kirk Cousins, and the defense is subpar. If you devote $25 million to a quarterback, he's got to be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Big Ben or Peyton Manning, maybe Drew Brees. More precisely, he's got to be a quarterback who can win a Super Bowl with an average supporting cast because that's what you're going to be stuck with. You're paying a quarterback $25 million, you're going to get, at best, an average supporting cast. Now, you know, you get a chance with your rookie drafting and everything, but it's hard to build a team completely successfully through your first, second, third round picks. Eventually, you got to pay somebody, and the guys you pay will be sub-elite. If you look at how this works in the NFL, you either get elite quarterback play or you get Russell Wilson or Joe Flacco. You get titles on rookie contracts with those two guys. Look at the AFC specifically. I love this stat so much. AFC Super Bowl quarterback since 2003, Brady, Brady, Ben, Manning, Brady, Ben, Manning, Ben, Brady, Flacco, Manning, Brady, Manning, Brady. 2012, you get Joe Flacco to break up the obvious pattern. And in that season, Joe Flacco was making $7 million. Now, Tom Brady's making like 14 or something this year because his contract is ridiculous and he's getting offshore money funneled to him through Russia or something for sure. Like, he's definitely getting money from Russia. But it's all Manning, Brady, Ben, with the exception of Joe Flacco in his fifth year making less than $7 million. So it gave the Ravens the ability to have an incredibly talented defense, to surround him with as many weapons and as good of an offensive line as possible. Russell Wilson just did that in Seattle a couple of years ago. Whenever those guys get big contracts, whenever Joe Flacco is no longer of value, well, then you start seeing Torrey Smith leave. You have a hard time replacing the guy who would come in after Ray Rice would be. You have a hard time keeping that defense in tip-top shape after you lose Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Replacing those guys on the cheap is very difficult. Seattle's window stretched a little bit longer because they had a lot of guys on good contracts. Oakland's window is now closing, which is a crazy thing to think whenever you see how like young that team is. But their window has begun shrinking now. Because they're going to be playing Khalil Mack. They're going to have to pay Amari Cooper. As you have to pay guys big money, you have to get the other things more and more precisely correct. Because any mistakes you make, you can't cover up. You can't buy your way out of a mistake in the NFL whenever you have either dead cap money or a ton of money in a quarterback. So, like, as a Chiefs fan, 2019 is going to be lit. Because they should have no dead money. They're probably going to eventually cut somebody who will have dead money there, but I'll be frustrated when it happens. No dead money, no big contract for Pat Mahomes, your starting quarterback is cheap. That's when your window is the most open. Because you can bring in big weapons, you can cover up your mistakes with money. But the Raiders are still probably going to win the division this year. This has been Sports Sunday. My name is Joshua Briscoe. Thank you, Charlie Carlin, for running the board. Thank you for listening. Please don't shank me, guy in a Tyreek Hill jersey. Bye, Mom.